Welcome to the Fan Experience Experience with Darren and Mark and a special guest.
Welcome to the Fan Experience Experience podcast series. As I'm sure you know by now, each podcast will explore a different element of the fan experience and fan engagement. Some will look at the match day experience while others will explore broader themes. But every podcast will deliver value to anyone listening in football or indeed any other spectator sport. So whether it's general advice you need or ways to help you start a conversation with your own colleagues, we reckon that a regular dose of the fan experience will make a difference. So join me, Mark.
And me, Darren, as we explore ways of improving the experience on match days, making clubs more sustainable and relying less on winning to keep those fans engaged.
And of course, if you want to find out more about us, you can check out our website, www.fanexperienceco.com, and you can follow us on Twitter at @fanexperienceco. So we do two types of podcasts, of course. I'm sure you know by now that on some podcasts we talk about broader themes, but on others we talk about specific points within the fan experience and within the match day experience. Today we're going to talk about inside the stadium. I was just looking at our Instagram feed, fanexperience.co, the other day. There are a lot of videos from the various visits we've made across Europe. Darren and I always have the phone handy so we can depict what's going on inside stadiums. I think, Darren, you'd agree that there have been some fascinating experiences over the months, haven't they?
Oh, it's just absolutely fantastic, yeah. I think, obviously, our assessments cover a large part of the match day experience, you know, right from almost looking at the website right the way through to the end of it. But there's nothing quite like being in the stadium, is there, to start to really feel as though things are happening.
No, you're quite right. And of course, when we started, you know, one of our key messages going back to, you know, 15 years was that, you know, the fan experience is about much more than just 90 minutes inside the stadium. We weren't being dismissive of it. We were just saying that if you want to diversify your fan base, appeal and reach out to other people within your community, you do need to think about things like the website, the information you provide, the picture you paint, you know, your identity within the community, and all sorts of things to do to entertain yourself before the game. But, you know, inside the stadium, we are not clearly here just talking about the match itself. We're talking about all of the different touch points inside it, from the stewards inside the stadium to signage to refreshments that you might find, and also, you know, services for people who may need extra assistance, such as disabled supporters. So
it all comes together, though, isn't it? Because I think one thing I always think is with the assessment is that the pressure's on when you get inside the stadium, because suddenly you have all these diverse parts of the experience that are all coming together. So the club has to think about entertainment, about the mascot, about you know, what's happening at half time, and all those things sort of all come together, because whatever you promise on the website and whatever you do to get people there, what they remember, most of it is going to take place once they're inside.
Absolutely. And then I guess we've got this step that hopefully is coming closer all of the time. And that's the point at which we welcome fans back to stadiums. So, of course, the focal point will be, what is it like inside of the stadiums? I mean, how are clubs going to deal with that post-COVID situation? But we're delighted to have a longtime friend of the Fan Experience Company as our guest today. It's Sean Jones, who's Head of Customer Experience at Leeds Rhinos. Sean, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Mark. Hello, Darren. Thank you very much for having me on today.
And thanks for sounding so excited about it.
what you hear now is genuinely how I genuinely am, isn't it?
No. We usually tell all our guests to go out for a run or do some exercise, you know, so they sound more exciting than that we all normally do during our day. But you've managed to you've just hit the ground running, so we appreciate that.
Yep. No. Absolutely. Yep. Feeling spirited today for a Monday.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's quite some achievement when you consider what you've been through in the last 18 months at Headingley. First of all, you had a new stand, the South Stand, wasn't it, in February 2019? So what? Yeah. There and 4 or 5 months ago, and mm-hmm. then in May of the same season, you then opened up the North Stand, which, just to make it slightly even more complicated, backs onto one of the most famous, if not the most famous, cricket ground in the world, which of course is Headingley. So to start with, you don't have a traditional setup for a stadium. So talk us through what your role was in all of that as head of customer experience?
The start of the development of the stadium really stems back as far as sort of 2010, to be honest. The South Stand, which is in the world of rugby league and potentially in other sports, is a pretty iconic stand. Many a rugby league player and rugby union to an extent have run out on that pitch in front of the wall of sound that is the South Stand. It's where the hardcore fans go. Standing terrace, you know, people have been there generations upon generations, and that was due to come down in 2010. There was some work that needed doing on it, and it was seen as more financially viable to stand down. So the plan started to go in from there. And I think where it kind of got to is that the South Stand, and then straight opposite are the all-seater stand, which we share. So it's what we say is a double-sided stand, seating on one side, which faces the iconic rugby pitch, and then the seating on the other side that faces the cricket ground. That is a unique stand where you can actually, looking out of our new suite, you can look out on either side. It's the only place in the world where you can overlook two professional international sporting grounds. So that was that came at the similar sort of time. So it became the point where if you're doing one, you need to do the other. And in 2010, we didn't have the finances, we didn't have the financial support and the backing. So we did the work that we needed to do to make the South Stand safe and strong for all the fans, and ploughed on into trying to get the finances behind us to do the overall major redevelopment. And also to get it right, instead of just sort of taking down the South Stand and rebuilding in the same footprint, we had to look at future-proofing the stadium for how it would go in the future. Mm. As a sport, you know, we're still lucky that we can have standing terraces. And we did go through a bit of a period of fans backlash, not wanting seats in their standing stand. If you know what I mean. So there was a couple
You remember when we were privileged to be asked to go along and just have a look at what was going on in the early days of the South Stand. But I guess that was one thing that I remember you commenting on, was the fact that down near the pitch you've got the standing area, then further up behind you have the seating area, which is how it should be, isn't it?
Oh well, it as a fan of a lower league club, that's how it always used to be. I remember. Yeah. Going to games and standing on the terraces with people sitting behind me all the time. But I really enjoyed that night when the South Stand opened and we went. But one thing I guess struck me very clearly was just what a difference it was for fans, and in good and bad ways, because obviously fans get very used to familiar surroundings. So that must have been a challenge for them.
I tell you one thing, I must mention, Sean, before we go any further. I mean, we're going back. You mentioned 2010. In 2015, one of the things, I always think this was a real sign of kind of the spirit of Leeds Rhinos, that you don't stand still. You were the first club to invite our voiceover man, Cameron Hughes, to actually come and do his thing, which is to basically jump up and down, entertain, to get people maybe in some of the quieter stands of the stadium to really get involved in the experience. And he was up in the the east stand. Is it the Carnegie Upper? Is it that?
Yeah. Well, the extension stand. Yeah. It's since he's been, it's changed sponsorship. So yeah, extension stand behind the post.
Well, he was up there doing his thing, and there were a lot of families and kids up there. And all of the guys in the South Stand down at the bottom, all of the girls and the guys basically beckoned him down. And at first, he was a little worried that he might never come out alive. But the last time I saw him, he was being passed across his shoulders like Peter Gabriel at a live concert. You know,
he was so funny.
No. And after he left hospital, he talked very positively about it afterwards. I remember. But it's just that spirit. And you had us in to look at things that, you know, the people, clubs don't often look at in a lot of detail inside the stadium, you know, how, not just how quickly, you know, refreshments were being served, but how positively and how engaged the staff were. Because although they're very busy and they've got huge numbers of people to deal with, that still doesn't stop people from smiling and looking like they're enjoying being there. And you also had a little satellite retail store there. You had live music there. You actually pack a hell of a lot into that South Stand. And yeah. Darren, what are your recollections of that first visit we made?
I remember the being quite a lot of differences for fans and lots of questions. And I think that put, I remember the staff had to think of a lot of new things. So there was lots of challenges because, you know, obviously when fans get there and see something for the first time, they have lots of questions and they want to explore as well to a certain degree. So I remember that. And I just remember how the staff had to just react really, really quickly to all these changes, and they were getting questions from left, right and centre, and it was just, you know, it was just a really good experience.
I think it's interesting as well that what you've done is you've taken on board feedback, and obviously you watch things very, very carefully. You have your team leaders out there who you communicate with regularly. And then I went back for the double header that kicked off this season, so effectively a year later. And what came, there's two things that really stood out for me. One was that really visible level of extra engagement from the people that work there, especially the stewards. I mean, obviously you've got Rob, who everybody knows, who greets people. He's commercial director, is that right?
Yeah, Rob Oates, commercial director.
And Rob's been a fan all of his life. I mean, I think since he's about four-year-old. And he positions himself between the club store and the access to the various hospitality areas, which of course is where the majority of fans will walk down as they take their seat in the south stand, and talks to everybody. And the fact that he does it every time means that he probably knows about 20,000 individual people over the years. So that was one thing. But I also wanted to mention the fact that what you actually did, you helped us develop a particular part of our service now, our heat spot service, because we were looking at different parts of the layout of the stadium for that double header, and we were able to kind of almost temperature check how strong the levels of engagement are within different parts of the ground. And they were strong everywhere, but in particular at the entrance for the away fans. And considering you had away fans from two clubs, I think it was Hull FC and maybe not so many.
Yeah, Hull FC and Castleford, wasn't it?
But yeah, that was it, yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously Toronto were the other home club for the day. Mm-hmm. So how do you go about, let's assume you've got all the operational practices in place, you know, after the two stands have been erected and they've been opened and you've had fans in there. How do you make sure that you don't lose that edge, the kind of the preparedness to engage with people and smile, walk up, strike up a conversation? How do you make that part of people's jobs?
I think one of the biggest things for me, and I think I've always said it, and it's always been a big part of discussion for us, is just ensuring that all your staff that are involved with that matchday experience, so be it the person that's, you know, serves the drinks or, you know, serves the food or, you know, at Headingley, we've got, internal bars that are part of the stands, but we've also got some food concessions which operate within the footprint of the stadium, but they're part of us as well. And just that consistent communication and engaging and embracing them more into the culture of the club. You know, look, I'm never going to sit here and say we've got this perfect. We went through some massive challenges all through the development. It was a constant movable feast. It wasn't like you had a moment where you could, you know, shut down and take a week and figure it all out. And in some respects, you know, fair credit to our customer facing crew, the stewards and the security and like supervising staff. Some of them saw the stand 24 hours before the general public did, you know, and my team, the customer experience guys, and, you know, and basically everybody within the rugby club staff, a lot of us had only seen stands in operation. You'd not been able to sort of test drive them. So you were learning a lot on the hoof. Yeah. And there, if you didn't embrace or invite people to feed back to you who were within your, you know, team of people, so the stewards, if you didn't say to them, come and talk to me or tell me what's going on, because then I can make amends accordingly. If you didn't do that, I owe fair credit to all of them because they're your eyes and ears on the ground. So you've got to embrace those people. And they were the really, really important part for me. And I'm spending time with them.
Darren, do you remember, I'm not sure, I think we were both there when the stewards briefing was happening in the cafe. Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah, I do.
Yeah, and that's a kind of a key part of it. It's very easy to just be drawn into the usual, you know, safety, health and safety, security requirements and any particular,
I think Sean just picked up on it there because one of the things that I think is, you know, I talk a lot about in the fan experience is consistency. And Sean just hit on that word as well. So all the people, regardless of what task they're doing and what part they play in the overall picture, need to have that consistency. And I think one thing I remember about that briefing that I really enjoyed was that it's sort of, and correct me if I'm wrong, Sean, but it's sort of assumed that people knew how to do the job, but it really sort of fired them up in why they were doing it, and also really got them into the spirit of what the stand meant and what the fan it meant to the fans and everything. So that it was far more than just, well, this is how you do, you know, this is the mechanical part of the task, if you like.
Yeah, I think it's important. You know, and I'm not saying, again, I'm not sitting there and going, we've got it right and we sit there and we've got it perfect. I very much believe, you know, and I do come across it with other clubs and the challenge of, oh, well, you know, we have problems with the stewards in the stand. And it's always, you know, and I do feel that it's sometimes very unfair that people instantly direct to that customer facing member of staff who is in that stand. Well, they don't exude the same passion as you do because they are a member of staff who might come to Headingley once every 2 weeks, once every 3 weeks, and might never ever, you know, they won't understand the same feeling or have the same as I do. But you've got to try and feed onto that. So you need to feed that to them so that they understand how important it is. Otherwise, they just turn up, want to do the job and go home. You don't always get everybody who's going to be a really passionate character, everyone that's really going to understand the fans. So, you know, my job and the job of my team is to feed that passion to them, and hopefully they'll lap that up a little bit and take it out into the field for them. You've got to work with them. You can't just leave them and expect staff who are out in that field and your eyes and ears and are serving the fans that you deal with in day in, day out. You can't just expect them to do it just because you said you've got to go and do that. Because they don't understand the background, they don't understand the history.
So how do you go about doing that? Because obviously I see you when I was there at the double header. When I finally took my seat, I was at the bottom of the north stand, not too far from the subs benches, and I saw you go past about three or four times. It was like Alberto Juan Terreno, you know, like a 400-meter runner. You kept going past it very, very quickly. But I know that it's not just the prompting in the stewards meetings. I know it's not just the hands-on being there for people and being accessible by text and, you know, during the day, but you're actually doing this continuously, aren't you? You've got form of input from the supporter panel. People for some time, you know, because they're able to be a kind of a funnel for what's coming back from the fans. But you also do quite a lot of other sessions right across the club, don't you?
Yes. So we've one of the ones that we took into was that the development of the stadium, we felt that we needed to get everybody in initially to get them started, to get an understanding of what we were about to do. So we actually did something that had never been done from our side before. And we got Mark involved, didn't we? You and I created a bit of a concept, and we brought everybody in who we felt was an influential customer facing or fan facing member of staff on a game day, and did a few sessions with them. So we had about three or four sessions, didn't we? A couple of evenings and a couple of Saturdays so that we could try and get everybody. It was a voluntary thing. We didn't enforce it on anybody. We just invited all the office staff who are full-time staff members, part-time staff members of the club, steward supervisors. So the supervisors normally, but I said, if there's any other stewards who are pretty regular who want to join, that's fine. The guys from the food concessions, so the external company that we have, Naturally Best, who come in and do our food concessions. So Paul and Wendy, brilliant. They got some of their staff on board. The programme sellers, the lottery seller, you know, the half-time draw sellers, sorry. Just anybody that basically stood in front of fans on a game day and made that experience.
And do you know what happened? Sian, you know what worked particularly well? You had this idea, because obviously the prospect of having to listen to me for more than 15 minutes, you know, is going to be enough for most people. But one of the things you suggested at the start was...
They loved it. What are you saying? They loved it. They were hanging on your every word. And that's true. I'm not being sarcastic. They loved it.
It was just your idea of a quick multiple choice quiz, and it worked so well. It was just because it was all about in-stadia operations, and that's what we're talking about today. The ways things work, what needs to happen, and we obviously added some in about the club and players and stuff like that, but it just worked so well because it obviously gave people from different parts of the club an idea of what was going on elsewhere. I thought that was really good. Now what about this signage though? Because that I thought the signage was, you know, and I'm not standing here saying there was signage or the signage was at the right height or it was an easy to read font, but it was just so inclusive in its language. And I loved that. I mean, the example I shared with you afterwards was from the South Stand. Do you remember me sharing that with you?
Yes. Yeah. So the signage, very much a bit of a brainchild of our ops director, Sue Ward, myself, and another girl that works within the ops team, Steph. Steph was very instrumental in the installation of the signage, you know, and we all had our sort of part to play in it, but it was very much about simplicity. You've got to make it as simple as possible. You're not trying to send people on a wild goose chase. They're not turning up to a game to be going around the houses to try and find anything. And there's almost the argument that less is more. If you get it right, if you get your wording right, you know, and we like to think we've sort of made it, but, you know, the inclusive, one of the biggest ones for us was, and it was actually directed from a fan about the on our accessible toilets. It's got a sign that says not every disability is visible.
Yeah.
And that was an understanding point, really, that, you know, and that is guidance for fans, not just fans, but for anybody that enters that stadium, whether you're a staff member or anything, that, you know, you can use that accessible toilet. If it's not visible, doesn't mean it's not there. So it's got to be, and that is how the you know, the world is going now, and you need to be a lot more inclusive in as much as you can do. And that I think that's it. That is the example you are referring to, isn't it? Our nice little signs on there.
It's on the point there, Sian, as well, of how making it easy is so important. And you know, I mean, obviously, you had quite a unique situation as well in that you had new stands opening, certainly in the game I was at, and therefore was making it easy was almost imperative to the experience.
Yeah.
But actually, I think what a lot of clubs forget is that you have to do that all the time, because you can't just assume that fans will always know exactly what to do. There'll always be a proportion of fans who are there for the first time, for example, who don't know any of those things. So, you know, I think there's a real importance that sort of perhaps gets underplayed a bit. But I remember as well, and I think another really important point is how it has to be really easy for staff as well. And I remember, certainly in the game I was at, there was a member of staff who was standing in the concourse at the entrance into the stadium, and she was just welcoming everyone through. And I remember having a chat with her and saying, why don't you say enjoy the match to people as well? And I remember her saying, can I do that? Because I'd really like to do that. And it actually made her job far more enjoyable.
And
she was absolutely delighted. She was very young and inexperienced, I think, but it was see her face light up and think, I can do that, because that will make my job and my time here so much better as well.
And of course, at the stadium, you have the benchmark for engaging fans. Is he called John, the programme seller?
Oh, yes, John Brooke.
Yes.
He sells our programmes in the South Stand,
Well, that's not what he, you know, it's almost like that story, you know, the guy that's sweeping the road outside of Cape Canaveral, you know, asks what he's doing and he says, I'm helping to get a rocket on the moon, you know, and it's a bit of an easy analogy you hear, but that was genuinely what he was doing. He wasn't selling programmes, he's connecting with people. He has a story for everybody.
Oh, he does,
His energy from, but, you know, he's part of the experience. And we see so many, you know, when we're inside stadiums, you know, and traveling around, you see, like Darren said, so many missed opportunities, but he was fantastic.
Yeah, like, he's a real credit to the club, just in his how he is. That's always been his, you know, his position. It was actually quite a difficult task when the stand was under development, because where do you put John? Because he had such a prime position there, and when the stand was under development and all that area that you're referring to was under construction, we had to find somewhere to make sure John was in a peak spot. We had to move him around a little bit, bless him. But those types of that sort of personality. John's been around the club for years. We've got groups of stewards and supervisors who've been around for years, you know, passing my tenure at the club. But I think we try and be a family. And I know people use this, but they do bond this around very loosely. You know, oh, we're a family club, we are. But the Rhinos to me genuinely is, you know, a lot of the staff have been around a long, long time. But our management team, we clock up a fair whack of into the hundreds of years together. And equally, we've got groups of stewards and supervisors who, you know, start off as trainees and are still kicking on with us now. And they love it forever. They've had great experiences and great times. So it is trying to just ensure that those people are equipped with the things that they need to be able to do things. And you know, I find, and I'm not saying it's because it's me, I'm saying it's because that the club wants to create that culture. You know, your Rob Oates, commercial director, wants to stand on the ground floor on a game day, you know, wind, rain or shine, meeting and greeting those fans. I go and speak to all the stewards, not just the supervisors, but the stewards, and, you know, try and give a bit of a motivational gear up before every game. To try and, like you say there, Darren, to give them that a little bit of a free rein. Enjoy yourself, have fun. You, if you're thinking it's cold and it's rainy and I'm a bit tired, and, you know, actually, well, for 3 hours, just say, evening, how are you doing? Enjoy the game. Because 3 hours will fly by.
I think you've hit on a real point there, Sean, as well. And I think it's a great example the clubs could use. And that's the, in Rob and John, you've got great examples. And actually, sometimes you haven't got to go into huge amounts of training to say to people, this is how you need to do it. You can just say, look at the example being set here, because people will quickly pick up on the way that the club does things. And when they see the stuff that Rob and people like John are doing, it's very easy to follow.
The difficulty was the time of the development. And as I said before, it was a movable feast. It was constantly changing. It was a program that was really, really condensed into a couple of years. So to be able to manage that and strike a balance between development and us managing the fan experience, I'm not going to say it didn't come without its challenges, but now it's all about trying to, you know, we're not thinking about how we've got to move 2,000 people from this stand to this stand just for two games because we've got to move them back here to there, and managing everything with a term and a condition that goes with everything, trying to loosen the reins a little bit and each year doing those a little bit more, giving them the tools that they need to do it. So for instance, this year we brought out the stewards matchday handbook, which was requested and worked on with the stewards, with the supervisors. And it's get a little booklet that's got everything in that they need to know about a game day. You get issued one on arrival. You have a read through it. You have a bit of a chat with us. Then you go into your briefings. We've changed how they do their briefing. Get them to lead you a little bit. What will make you give me your best? Basically where we're going now. So
I think you know, I would say to everybody that listens to this podcast, and you know, we've recently put it up on Google and Apple and Spotify and Stitcher and places like that. You can even shout at Alexa and get it to deliver it to you. But when you talk about the best, I would definitely cite Sean and her team and the stadium at Headingley as a definite centre of best practice. And it was nice to get a celebratory noise from the computer at that point as well. But as is always the case in our podcast, now it's
time for the roundup.
And it's a roundup. And we've got a couple of stories related that we wanted to share with you this week that we've picked up from the press. First, with the return of the Premier League, we're recording this on Monday, the 15th of June. We have the Premier League coming on Wednesday the 17th, and we know that the clubs, all of the players have been big movers in this, will be wearing hashtag Black Lives Matter on the back of their shirts. That goes along with Marcus Rashford, who is campaigning, supporting with finance an extension to the free school meals voucher scheme. It's absolutely fantastic. You know, we absolutely support all of these. You know, we stand with the Black Lives Matter movement. We stand with inclusion and equality. And that brings us to the end of this week's podcast. So a big thank you to Sean Jones from Leeds Rhinos for joining us. And also to Darren, of course, our producer. And most of all, everybody out there. Thank you for listening in. And of course, you can now listen to us on all of the major podcast hosting sites, including Spotify, Apple, Google, Stitcher, and Buzzsprout. So tune in next week, next time, to the Fan Experience Experience, and see you then.
And don't forget to check out our new website at fanexperienceco.com. The Fan Experience Experience was recorded live. See you next time.